everyone. Welcome to the Abundology Podcast. I am here with Lori Ann Rising. And like everybody I talk to, nobody has just one thing they do anymore. We're all so multi-talented. Yeah, exactly. That was our grandparents' estate in the same job for 50 years.
Right, right.
You are a certified life coach, a spiritual mentor, a digital nomad, and the award-winning author of You Thriving, Reclaim Your Life, Live Your Purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been looking forward to this podcast because you have such great information, and specifically about self-abandonment.
Mm-hmm.
Self-abandonment versus self-fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of those topics that we all can relate to, that we have done that at some point in our
mm-hmm.
life. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the ways that self-abandonment may show up in life?
Well, it's one of those things that typically somebody's really not aware they're doing it in the first place. They really think they're coming from being who they're supposed to be and being, you know, this wonderful, amazing person who's always generous and helpful and, you know, people-pleasing types of things. But we don't know that's what we're doing. So what winds up showing up first is these patterns in our lives where we just keep... somehow, we don't know how, but we keep creating the same thing over and over again, and it's just not working, and we can't quite break free of the cycle, and we don't know why. We've done all the 5-7-step stuff. We've done all the, you know, processes, and, you know, we keep trying to change out there somehow, but the cycle keeps showing up.
Yes.
And what it comes back to is choices we're making that we are probably unconscious of, and we're really deeply trained into from childhood.
Yes.
That here's what a woman is, and here's what we're supposed to do. And so we're doing that as much as we can and ignoring who we really are. And that's the self-abandonment.
Yes.
That we're not in tune with our own, I want to say, I call it my wise one within, W-O-W, because it's the wow factor in our life. Some people may refer to it as their soul, their intuition, the universe within, whatever that is. I believe that there's something in us that is deeply wise, and we're trained to tune it out.
We're trained to ignore it, tune it mm-hmm. out. And that mm-hmm. looks like people-pleasing?
It looks like people-pleasing. It looks like saying yes when you mean no. It looks like burning the candle at both ends because somehow it's a badge of honor to be busy and overwhelmed.
Yes.
It looks like all kinds of different things. It can show up in our finances. It can show up in our relationships. It can show up personally or professionally. It's being out of alignment with whatever our truth is. It's staying silent when we know we should speak up. It's all of those kinds of things where we look in the mirror and go, that wasn't right.
And you're right. We're not even consciously aware that we're doing these things until we get maybe later in life,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we're like, what did I just say yes to? I don't want to do this.
Right.
I cannot tell you the number of times that I have agreed to do something, especially at night. Now, after 5 o'clock, you know, going out with girlfriends is one thing. But
right.
if it's a business thing, and in the moment even, I'll be like, yeah, that could be fun. Yeah, sure, I'll go.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets to that day, and it's like, why did I say yes that I would go to this? I don't want to go to this.
Mm-hmm.
It's so freeing to be able to say no.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels so good.
It's empowering,
isn't
it? It's
empowering, yes.
It is really empowering. And I think so much of it comes from, especially as women, we're trained, you know, to avoid conflict or be the peacekeeper. And so any little piece that feels like, oh, if I do it that way, I'm going to upset somebody.
Yes.
I don't want to upset somebody. I don't want to create conflict. That confrontation, that simple act of saying, you know what, that just doesn't feel right to me, feels confrontational.
Does it?
When we're not in a habit of giving ourselves permission to do it.
Yes.
As we get in the habit of it, it becomes easier. And we collect people around us that are like, hey, that's totally fine.
Yes.
But when we're not in that habit, we collect people around us that the first couple of times we do that, they are confrontational and they don't like to hear it. And so we have to train them also that this is okay. and to expect it from us.
That's a really good point.
It's that, you know, who, because when we're out of alignment, we collect people around us who like that person. We're being somebody, and it's collecting people who like that person. So as we shift, it can get a little challenging because we see our whole lives shift.
Yes.
Because the people who liked that person that was out of alignment are, you know, sometimes they do come along and they allow us to grow, and there are those who don't.
Yes.
And we get those reactions. We get those that transitional period that feels really bumpy.
Really bumpy.
But getting to the other side, oh my goodness.
And that's one of the things I hear from people the most, is they are concerned about how they, when they change, how it's going to affect the relationships in their lives. Mm-hmm. And we love the people. Let's be honest.
Oh, yeah.
We love these people that are in our lives.
Oh yeah.
But if we're not being authentic, mm-hmm. then the relationship isn't authentic and real either. And we forget that.
Right. And what winds up happening is this inner voice that goes, gosh, how can this person really love me when I know I'm not being me? Mm-hmm. And there's this underlying, ongoing self-doubt, self-deprecation, you know, the self-abandonment. That it's like, well, I have to be this person for that person to love me, but I know that's not who I am, so they don't really love me, do they?
Yeah.
And it's this, it's a horrible cycle.
Yeah.
And to get out of it, we have to confront that in ourselves and in that space, in that relationship.
Yes.
And yes, sometimes those people do walk away. And sometimes they come with us. And we don't have control over that. And that's the scary piece.
It is. Yeah, the no control.
We have to find a center in ourselves that goes, whatever happens, I still have me.
And part of that people pleasing and saying yes is about the control. Like, we mm-hmm. want to control the outcome. Okay, they're going to like mm-hmm. me, and I'll do this, and, mm-hmm. you know, I'll make sure everything is okay. Mm-hmm. I'll brush it over, mm-hmm. you know. So a lot of this is giving up that control.
It's giving up control. It's giving up our own personal power. And I think that's really underlying the crux of it, is that we're taught we don't have power, or that power is a bad thing. You know, we do the same thing with money. It's like, well, if I'm wealthy, I don't want to be one of those people
yes.
who's greedy and horrible.
I hear that all the time.
And we do the same thing with power. When we say, oh, you know, we talk about power, there's that underlying, well, but if I'm powerful, I don't want to be one of those people. Like, it's somehow negative. And we think of the dictators, or we think of how, you know, those who misuse certain types of power. But what I'm talking about is, you know, that empowerment piece. It's like, you know what? I stood in my truth, and maybe that person didn't like it, but wow, I can look at myself in the mirror at the end of the day, and I know who I am.
Yes.
That's power.
It is.
Too.
And especially as women, we've been a little brainwashed, you know.
Wait, what?
We've been really brainwashed. That power looks like the bitch. Mm. Or, you know, that person you never want to be around.
Uh-huh.
Which, if we really evaluate that person is not powerful at all. Mm-hmm. That is just how they're trying to manipulate the mm-hmm. situation in a different way.
Or using that word is another way, because women don't want to be perceived as the bitch.
No.
So if somebody else uses that word, it's a way they're trying to control us.
Good point.
So it's both and. It's, again, I don't want to be that person. People are going to perceive me that way. Well, and you know what? Let them. If they're the type of person who's going to respond to your personal truth with that level of bullshit, let them and walk away. They're not part of what is going to support you long term in being all that you can be.
It's so true.
I mean, and sometimes that sucks. Because it could, realistically, it could cost you your job. It could cost you your relationships. It could cost you your home. It could cost you things. And that's why we don't do it. Because we've built this whole life around being something we're not.
Yes.
And there is a cost in the transition. But there's also a deep choice in the sense that, what is the cost by staying being that other person? And now that you're conscious of it, the toll is going to be that much more. So we can go through the temporary pain of restructuring our lives and then live the rest of it feeling fulfilled and drawing in all the things that feel good and support us, or we can stay put and someday probably wake up and go, I wonder what if.
I wonder what if.
What if I had? There went my life.
Yep.
And we have to make that choice.
Yep.
And it's not an easy choice. I've been down that road a couple of times. It sucks. It sucks moving forward through it. But getting to the other side of it is worth it.
And I think a lot of us don't even know what self-fulfillment looks like, how it shows up, you know. And so we don't even know what we're doing. We know that the old way, this isn't right, and we know deep down, you know, this isn't right, those things that you're doing, and you make, yeah. But then when you're moving to self-fulfillment, can you give us some examples of how that may show up in a life, or the habits of that?
Yeah, it is definitely a leap of faith in many ways, and it's a step-by-step process of developing trust in that self, that wise one within. So you're right, there is this leap into the unknown. But self-fulfillment, you know, I want to say on the other side of that bridge, it doesn't mean life gets easy. There's still going to be challenges and roller coasters, and life is going to happen. But what it does mean is that you feel an underlying sense of contentment, an underlying sense of foundation within. You can look at somebody and go, here's my backbone, and we can have this conversation, and I'm still centered. And however it comes out is okay. And so relationships wind up, I feel, becoming deeper because there's a willingness to work through the hard stuff.
Right.
And find something that is mutually beneficial rather than us compromising who we are, which is a different kind of compromise than, you know, let's work this out.
Right.
You know, there's compromising the how it looks, and there's compromising who we are. We don't have to compromise who we are.
Yeah.
And the right people in our lives want us to be more of who we are, not less.
Yes.
So it winds up weeding out that which is not healthy for us. So we get to thrive. We get to be more creative. We get to be more open. We get to have more genuine relationships. And I have been feeling like life just gets to be more fun. There's a lot more joy.
Yes.
And I think it's because those relationships shift, you know, and work does shift. Even when I'm doing the same thing, my relationship to my work is so much better and healthier because I'm standing in that truth and doing more of it every day. And so it's difficult to describe at some level because it is an inner experience, and yet, I mean, everything in life shifts to reflect it. The bank account shifts, the relationships shift, work shifts, personal, you know, looking in the mirror every day. And do you see someone you go, wow, she's blossoming? Or are you continuing to see someone and go, what am I doing?
Yes.
You know, and if nothing else, at the end of the day, just being able to look at myself in the mirror matters to me. And that's a lot of what kicked off my own journey and got me through the challenges was, who do I want to be when I look in the mirror every day? Regardless of what anybody else thinks of me. And that journey, there are still people that I dearly, dearly love that I no longer have a relationship with, unfortunately. And their story about my actions is night and day different than my story about my actions. But they don't know who I am. And it's unfortunate. And I can still look at myself in the mirror every day. And one of the things I realized that journey itself taught me was that, ultimately speaking, the deepest truth is that we alone, and whether it's our soul or God or whatever that is we feel within us, that is the only thing we will have 100% of the time in our lives. That's it. That relationship within is it. Everyone else comes and goes. Even if we've lived with the same partner for 50 years, there are times they're not in our space.
Right.
You know, they're still coming and going.
Yeah.
we and we alone have ourselves to answer to.
And you wake up to yourself every day.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, no, so there may be somebody else in your bed or not, you know, but you are waking up to your life and your happiness mm-hmm. and yourself every day. That is the mm-hmm. number one relationship mm-hmm. that you have, is with yourself, your soul, your universe, your God, right. whatever that may be.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. However do you define it.
Right.
So.
Right.
So we know these two things, and clearly we know that we want to live life, you know, this other right, way of self-fulfillment. Right. So how do we start to make the shift over?
Well, there's a couple of things. First and foremost is getting back in touch with our emotions and our feelings. We are so taught, and I think especially for women, that being emotional is akin to being hysterical. We have to be stoic. We have to be, you know, or we're overreacting if we show emotion. So what? That's their discomfort, right? So there's all these things in our culture around what's appropriate for emotions. So we learn to tone them down and tune them out. But the thing is, emotions are where our wise one within is speaking to us.
That's good.
When we don't feel good, it's telling us something's off here, pay attention. When we're angry, usually it means somebody has broached a boundary that we need to reclaim or address in some way. When we're feeling good, we're in alignment. It is so simple and it's instantaneous. You know, you mentioned it earlier. It's like, why did I say yes? You feel that.
Yes.
It's somewhere in your body, you're feeling that. Oh, that didn't work right, what I meant, you know? So getting back in touch with our emotions is really a key element. And that's not the same as reacting to things or going out and acting on everything you feel. It's sitting down with what you're feeling to get the message behind it and then making an appropriate, healthy decision around what to do with that information. So, you know, especially the strong emotions, like anger comes to mind. I'm a Taurus. I get there. It's not always pretty. But I am constantly reminding myself to take a step back, breathe. What's really going on under this? And how can I talk through it in a mature, healthy way without exploding?
Yes.
Because I can get there, and it's never pretty, and it never feels good. It's not, you know, it just doesn't work. So I'm constantly learning that skill. But there's also the step of, you know, a lot of times when the emotions feel good, we're happy, we're joyful, we don't always stop and go, wait, what is it really about this moment that gets me there? Because that's learning too. That tells us what to do more of. What direction to go deeper into. And the more we do that, the more fun life gets. And we convince ourselves that we have to be realistic, we have to meet our obligations, we have to go back through the drudgery every day. And it's like, guess what? You don't, actually.
Yeah.
You may have to for a little while to get through the transition to create something else, but pay attention to what feels good, and that leads you into more possibilities, which, again, affects everything. So the first step is really getting in touch with the emotions. And then I would say the second step is taking appropriate action based on those messages. And that's the key of it. It comes down to those choices. Every choice we make can disempower us or empower us. And every choice does one or the other. There's no neutral choice.
Right.
And that, on one hand, is incredibly powerful to be aware of, and on the other hand, is terrifying as hell. We are afraid of our own power.
We are so afraid of our own power. And also, what I see often is people are afraid, or it feels really uncomfortable for them to feel good.
Mm-hmm.
That is where I see people bumping up against their limits,
mm-hmm.
is the feeling, because when the first time when you feel like ecstatic joy, or I did this, or confidence, it feels really uncomfortable.
It does.
Super uncomfortable.
It does.
Yeah. And then the next time you can feel a little bit more, mm-hmm. and a little bit more and a little bit more. But because mm-hmm. we're afraid of that uncomfortableness, we don't get there. We yep. hold ourselves, we hold our abundance back, our mm-hmm. love back, our mm-hmm. life back.
it's like we have to learn, it's like we have a thermostat of comfort level.
Yep.
And we have to learn to allow ourselves to shift it. And so there is this one step forward and a couple back, and then another step and a couple back, and this back and forth thing that happens. And it's interesting because in a lot of my own learning, one of the things I have learned, discovered, and really realized is like, wow, that's just, we are biologically programmed at a primal level to survive, not to thrive. So, you know, this world we live in is not what evolution designed us to live in.
Right.
So we have to remember we're designed to live in the forest with wild animals and be part of that cycle of, you know, okay, I'm as much prey as I am predator, right? And so the known is the safe zone. Walking outside of the known can get you killed in that environment.
Right.
So our brain is programmed to say, this is my comfort space. This is my comfort zone. And even if it sucks, I still know it and I know how to survive here.
Right.
And so we have to literally stop believing our own brain and our own thoughts and get out of our comfort zone intentionally on a regular basis. And it's learning to manage fear. And I decided on an acronym in my own work for fear, which is Friendly Energy Awaiting Recognition.
Oh, that's wonderful. Because Friendly Energy Awaiting Recognition. Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Because I've learned that fear is simply that part of us that wants us to be safe. It's like, you know, when my kids were really little and they're, you know, at that age where they're toddling around, but they're not aware of the danger in the street. And, you know, I'm paying attention, but they're just far enough away that the only way I can get their attention is to speak their name sharply, scare them, and then they run back to me. That's the fear that's in us. It's the parent part of us talking to the child and doesn't know any other way to get our attention other than to scare us. But as children learn about their environment, they learn to cross the street safely and they're no longer afraid of that space. So it's a matter of, okay, what is the fear trying to share with me?
Yes.
Because it's trying to keep me safe because it loves me so much. It's a friend. It is my best friend. It loves me. So what is it trying to share with me? Does it just need more information about a situation? Does it need me to stop, breathe, and have a decent meal because I've forgotten to eat for, you know, a day because I've been busy? Does it just need me? You know, what does that fear need? And we address that and it dissolves.
So I love approaching fear as a friend. Mm-hmm. And it's there to show us instead of, you know, oh my goodness, shying away from mm-hmm. it and doing everything you can to avoid feeling it mm-hmm. is to embrace it. And it's a friend and it's helping me make my mm-hmm. way through this situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it is part of that survival instinct.
Right.
I mean, even in the forest, the friend is like, I want you to survive. Don't go there. You know?
Yeah.
Don't eat that plant. Don't follow that trail without your weapons. You know,
that's yeah, exactly.
The fear is there because it loves us and wants us to be healthy and survive. And by embracing it, we can learn to thrive because we can get outside of the comfort zone by addressing those needs, by learning more. You know, tribal societies expanded their comfort zones simply by learning more about the environment around them.
Brilliant.
That's, I mean,
brilliant.
They just kept learning, and so they could expand. We can do the same thing.
Yes.
That is also part of our primal design, is to learn.
And learning more about ourselves.
Yes.
And what our needs are.
Yes.
And what where our boundaries are.
See, and I think that's the other piece that comes up, I think especially for women again, is that we're taught we're not really allowed to have needs.
Mm.
We're not really allowed to have desire. We're not really allowed to have ambition. Outside of, well, whatever my kids or my spouse or partner or whatever that other person are, the idealistic woman is the good, quiet woman who's doing everything for everyone else and has no self. I mean, if you look at the traditional vows, it's, you know, I now pronounce you man and wife. he's still a person, she takes on a role.
Right.
And loses her personhood. I am so grateful to see the world shifting.
Yes.
So grateful. And that unconscious piece, I think what's really happening is that piece still exists, but it's going underground, so it's harder to talk about. Because it's becoming less okay to acknowledge that it's there. It's like, no, we've changed. The women's movement is here. We don't do that anymore. Yeah, we kind of do. Every time we say yes when we mean no.
Right.
Or every time we say no when we mean yes. Every time we decide, okay, well, my partner needs this, so I'm going to push my needs away and not bring them up. That's all of that self-abandonment piece. Women have not been taught to go in the world and discover themselves. And that's what we need to do, is give ourselves permission to go, you know what? I have needs, and it doesn't mean I'm too much.
Right.
I have desires, and it doesn't mean I'm a bad, horrible, nasty girl. And if it does, embrace it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's okay. I have ambition, and that doesn't make me a man.
Or a bitch. You know?
Right.
Yes.
Right. I am as fully dynamic and all the way across the spectrum as anyone else in existence. And it's all okay. As long as I am acting in alignment with what is true for me, that is what I was born to do.
Wow.
Whatever the rest of society might think of that.
Wow. That's so powerful. And how... It's nice to be alive at this time where we see that one, we're even aware that this is happening. I could have been, 20 years ago even, where we didn't even acknowledge.
Wait, 10 years ago.
10 years ago.
It's not that far.
Okay, last year, maybe.
Depends on the circle.
There
are still places. I was actually talking with somebody just last week and talking about... She lives here. Her daughter lives in Tennessee, and the child, her daughter's, to be her grandchild. Yeah, that's how that works. is really, as a young child, showing a lot of intuition, showing a lot of awareness, showing a lot of even psychic abilities. And the community around that child is going to her mother and saying, you need to be careful. Your daughter's a witch.
Oh, you're kidding me.
This was last week.
No.
I'm dead serious. I'm like, they're not going to raise a stake and try to burn her. I'm like, they're using those words. She's a witch because she's in tune with her own intuition and not yet in a place where, she's not being taught to hide it. She's not being taught not to act on it because others might notice. She knows what she knows, and she shares it, and it scares the people around her.
Well, and if we think about intuition, which is something that we all have, but has been, like other parts of us, hidden, and we're taught, we're not going to talk about that, or people will think you're crazy, or they'll think you're this, they'll think you're that.
If you can't prove it, it's not real.
It's not real. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. So part of my work is helping people trust that intuition.
Mm-hmm.
And we all have it.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, and our society has tamped it down so much.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I remember being told when I was little, when I first asked my parents, what is intuition? And this was in the 80s, so I'm dating myself a little. But they flat out told me it's not real. It's part of that woo-woo stuff that people make up. And I remember looking at my parents as a very young child and consciously deciding, they're wrong, I'm going to hide it. And there are pros and cons to that decision, I can tell you. But it is, and I don't think we truly can hide it, ultimately speaking, because I wound up having to disconnect from it in order to hide it. Because being aware of it and acting on its messages, people noticed. Like, I would go to school, of course, growing up here in Portland, especially in the 80s, in the spring, the weather reports are kind of a joke.
Yeah.
You get every version of weather throughout the day, especially in the spring. And I remember it was spring, and I was in the habit of going to my closet every morning and just kind of standing there for a moment and going, do I need my umbrella or not? And something in the back of my mind would say yes or no, and I would just do it. I wasn't conscious of it at the time. It was just, that's what I did. And that was normal. It didn't occur to me that other people didn't do that. So I went to school one day. All the weather reports said it would be sunny all day and gorgeous. And it was sunny when I went to school in the morning. And I remember getting there and, of course, putting my stuff on the hooks in the back of the room. And I heard one of the other boys in class comment. He goes, "Oh, dang, Lori brought her umbrella. We're getting wet today."
Wow.
And everything in me stopped cold. Because I'm like, wait, nobody else does this? That was the first time it occurred to me that I was doing anything different. And secondly, damn, they noticed. And I honestly thought I was going to get in trouble.
Wow.
And at the end of the day, I was the only one dry. I was the only one who had my umbrella. So I was aware. I'm like, okay, it works. It's there. It's cool. And if people note, and like, I didn't want to stand out. My growing up life was safety meant being invisible. So to be noticed, that was not okay.
Yeah.
So I ended up tuning it out until I was in my 20s just so that I wouldn't be noticed.
Yeah.
So getting back into relationship with that has been its own journey, because now I overthink things and I have to shut that part of me down. And learning to trust, learning to tune back in, learning to figure out what my emotions mean again, learning all of those things. I've been, you know, I've lived this stuff.
Right.
You know, how else do we teach people, right?
Right. Like, and how else do we learn it? Exactly. Unless we learn it and experience it ourselves.
Exactly. Yes. So all of those things has definitely been a part of the process. But yeah, intuition is there. I think there is, you know, like you said, that wise one within that knows so much more than we do.
Yes.
And if we can be in alignment with her, that wow factor is just incredible.
Yes.
It's just incredible.
Yes. This has been a fabulous conversation. You're so wise. I almost feel ridiculous asking you for the final. I'm starting to do, I think I mentioned, final words of wisdom at the end of the podcast, which this podcast has just been 30 minutes of words of wisdom. But if there's one thing that you could leave us with as we move out onto our journey, you know, of life.
Oh, you know, what comes to mind is that time is going to pass no matter what you decide to do. So to me, the ultimate question is, who do you want to be when the only thing you can do is look back?
That's so good. Who do you want to be?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I made the decision years ago that I wanted to live my life with no regrets.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes right along with that.
That's an interesting one.
Yes. Yeah. Well, thank you. So, this has been such a wonderful conversation. I will put your info in the write-up to the podcast. And I also, you mentioned that you have a special.
I do. I am putting together a series of three videos kind of about this topic and how it even relates to leadership for entrepreneurial women, or even just leadership in our own homes. I really believe that this is the time when women can and need to be stepping into that fullness and lead anywhere they are in society. And so I'm putting together, it's a free 3-part training series, and I'll make it available to your audience. So it's going to be at my website, and specifically LoriAnnRising.com/abundology.
Wonderful. And I'll put the link in the podcast right up too, so it'll be an easy click for people to get there.
Perfect.
Thank you so much, Lori.
Thank you. This has been fun.